welcome to a new episode of the Creative Pivot Podcast. I'm your host, Heather Johnson. I'm a life coach who works with midlife women to start that business that they've always been thinking about or make that career change to something that speaks more to really what their heart is telling them they want to do. My guest today is Christy Neller. Christy is a storyteller, a brand and marketing strategist, a life coach, and a soul consultant. She is a creative in all the amazing, wonderful sense of that word. She and I have become close over the last 2 years. I'm so glad that our paths crossed and we were able to connect. And we finally were able to sit down and have this interview. A little background on Christy. She's originally from Kansas. She attended the Rhode Island School of Design, or RISD, Brown University, and then has lived in Boston, New York, San Francisco, and has just landed with her brood, her husband, two kids, and her puppy in LA, where we talk about what it feels like to build a new foundation. Christy is an amazing person. If you are interested in learning more about her, you can visit her website, Christy, K-R-I-S-T-I, Neller, N-E-L-L-O-R.com. Link is in the show notes, as well as following her on Instagram. And I'm just so glad to introduce you to Christy Neller. So on today's episode of the Creative Pivot Podcast, we have my friend and collaborator and I don't know what other hell yes sister, Christy Neller. And Christy, why don't you go ahead and introduce yourself?
Sure. Yep. I'm Christy. I'm really happy to be here. Where do I start? I am a former branding and brand strategist, creative director out of New York, and moved across the country to San Francisco about 6.5 years ago, and then just recently relocated to LA. And I have been pivoting my career in several ways more recently. And now I'm taking all of that branding, strategy, process, like the creative process, and putting it onto lifestyle. And so I've moved into the coaching world, and I'm helping people, mostly women, but anyone who are in some sort of transition and need to move to the next level. And so I'm helping take, you know, this sort of tried and true process that we use to bring like a creative vision for a product or a business to life, and sort of going through that process with people to help them create the lives that they love. And in that process, using a lot of spiritual, energetic, other kinds of, you know, behavioral studies kinds of approaches to help people really unlock what they need, what they're looking for, and what they envision. So yeah, that's me. That's what I'm doing these days.
Well, let's go back a little bit, because we'll get to your kind of burnout story, because you do have that. And it does, you know, from all the interviews that I've done, there is a kind of defining point. Sometimes it's burnout, sometimes it's some other thing that hits where you're like, what do I really want to be doing? Yeah. Like, and so let's go back a little bit to kind of your younger days. So you are creative in kind of almost the common definition of when we say someone's a creative artist. Just oozing out of who you are is all about creativity and kind of creating beauty in the world, right? Yep. When did that first start for you? When did you realize that you were maybe more in touch with the look of things, the feel of things, the energy that kind of came off of that?
Oh yeah. I mean, I've been creative my entire life. And it's interesting. My sister was also really creative. And if we go back even further, my mom, who doesn't call herself a creative, was making like three-dimensional cakes for all of our birthdays. Ever since I can remember, she was like the, you know, the class mom, and she would come in and sew, you know, little pumpkin pouches for Halloween and, you know, all of these things. And so there's just this creative vein that's been flowing through all of us. But, you know, she tells stories of me when I was little. Like, she'd have to take me somewhere and she'd lay a blanket out and she'd just bring a pad of paper and some pens. And I would just draw these worlds of these like little people. And they had these captions and it was all about their little world. And so that's been a long time coming. And then, what's interesting then is I was interested in so many other things than art. So I was also an athlete and, loved creative writing and all kinds of things like that. And so those things started to hit up against each other and I had to kind of define who I was going to be. And I think I've spent most of my life trying to not get put in a box. And in that endeavor, that's sometimes been very successful and catapulted me forward and sometimes been very difficult. And cause additional challenges because of fighting against whatever box someone was trying to put me in. So in high school, I, you know, was head of the art club and, you know, did so much art, and our school was International Baccalaureate. And so you could take all of these extra courses and those, that means they're like college level courses. And I did a lot of creative writing and art in those. But I also played volleyball and softball and, you know, all kinds of things. So I bounced around to different groups there. And then I had this incredible art teacher in high school, and I'm still connected to her to this day. She flew across the country to my wedding in New York. So I grew up in Kansas. And I attribute a lot of my creative, willingness to be creative in the world and see it as a profession and a way to move through my life to her. She really pushed us and she connected us to all of these art colleges across the country. And she brought the people to our classroom to meet us personally. So we didn't have to go to like a big portfolio day where you're overwhelmed with a million kids. And we made personal connections. And then that way we really, several of us ended up at different art schools and following some art careers and things like that. So I would say that's when it really took off. And then I went to the Rhode Island School of Design for college. And that school is really about teaching you, how to unlearn what you've learned and try to open your mind and expand your mind and think about things differently. So, yeah.
What do you think is the, you know, because you were so involved in both athletics and the arts and writing and having the power of, you know, a teacher like that, who really is a guide. Mm-hmm. Do you think that that led you to be able to visualize yourself on that path stronger than maybe on going another route?
Yeah, I think so. Well, there was also, I should mention, there were two really instrumental teachers. One was the art teacher and one was the English teacher. And her name was Miss Kyle, and she was really tough. And, you know, she had a reputation. Nobody wanted her class. You're going to flunk. She's really hard. I loved her. I loved everything about her. And she helped me really look at literature in a way that was so creative and artistic and, you know, go in and annotate and see foreshadowing and, you know, all of these elements. And I ended up mentoring other kids in her class. And it was like, it breathed life into me, right? And so I really loved writing. I really loved art. I really loved the mentoring. Mm-hmm. And then someone introduced, and I would be avidly watching the commercials at the Super Bowl. Like, I loved football, but I wanted to see those commercials. And I remember dreaming and being like, oh my God, I want to work for Nike. Oh my God, look at these. I want to create something like this. I just wanted to create impactful messages. And then someone told me about graphic design. And they said, you know what? There's this thing, it's called graphic design, and it uses words and it uses images and it blends them together to make an impact on people. And I was like, I'm sold. Sign me up. Where do I go? This has to be for me. And then to realize that you can use graphic design, like that's what was happening for Nike, which was an athletic brand. So how do you get into the psyche and the feeling of the athletes? Because no, at the time, nobody else was doing that. Nike was the end all be all of like getting into the performance mm-hmm. aspect of an athlete's head. Yeah. And what is the mindset that they have to be in to achieve these goals? And it wasn't really a thing. Like Adidas wasn't doing it yet. And, mm-hmm. you know, all of these other brands, they weren't doing that. They were like, look at this new shoe, or, you know, this is the new outfit that you can work out in. But it wasn't about like the choices that you make here make your performance better. Mm-hmm. So I think that's why I was so drawn to them. So that's how I got into, you know, graphic design. And then to understand that art can be a career, and you don't have to succumb to the cliche of the starving artist, which actually I want to negate that cliche anyway. That's, mm-hmm. that's a juicy topic, but yeah. that is what you think, right? Like when you hear, oh, I'm an artist, you think of a life of like Vincent Van Gogh, and you're going to end up shaving your ear off, you know, and like, you're going to be like tortured, and the only good art comes from sacrifice and suffering. Mm-hmm. And that's just not true. And I mean, that's a part of it. That was his experience and mm-hmm. that was his art, but that doesn't have to be like that, but we believe it does. And so just sort of seeing that pathway. That said, I was very much rooted in like the natural act of creating. So like printmaking and linoleum cutting and sketching, and I wanted no part of the computer, which is interesting because graphic design is very much computer. And I ended up utilizing it as a tool, but I still have a love-hate relationship with it. I'm still very rooted in like the tactile nature of creating.
Well, I know quite a few graphic design, especially like from our generation, maybe, you know, like Gen X and older kind of millennials, where when graphic, I mean, you were working in that area when graphic design was still kind of a hands-on, and then going into, well, how do I take this thing that I've created and now put it in the computer? And at that point, it was very, you know, it wasn't like you just pulled up, you know, Illustrator or InDesign or any of the Adobe suites and just started like, oh, drawing all over it. It was like,
yeah. What do we do here?
It was a heavy yeah. lift to like,
it was a heavy lift.
Yeah.
And speaking of that, like in my high school, there was a computer center where like you actually had a class where you went in and learned computers. Mm-hmm. You didn't just have a computer and do everything on it like this. Like you went in and learned how to type. I learned how to type on a typewriter. And then we had like typewriting class, and you had to learn like, you know, the little like, you know, what are they, whiteout tabs that you put yeah. and then you hit backspace, backspace, backspace. And then if the letter doesn't line up, you're like, that didn't really work, you know? Yeah. And I was horrible at it, 'cause like you weren't allowed to look down at the keyboard, and you know,
anyway, yeah, you had to look at your piece of paper of whatever that you were
yeah
typing.
And they're timing you. You're like, it was crazy. So anyway, we had like a computer lab to do, you know, like computer class. And then our school got one early, I think it was an iMac. It was like early Macintosh. Mm-hmm. And it was in the art department. And then we just had to take turns on who would do what on it. And I'll tell you, the first thing I did on the computer was a competition for, it was like to help clean up trash around. And I took the US poster of like, you know, the US Army poster or whatever that is like, we want you for the US Army or whatever. I did a spoof off of that. I drew that and I had the guy stand, Uncle Sam, with piles of trash behind him. And it was like, I want you for US cleanup or something. But what happened is I did the painting of that and then we scanned it in. And then I did the words on the computer. And it was crazy because I didn't even know fonts. Mm-hmm. It was so rudimentary, but it won the contest. I got like some sort of medal for it or something. I mean, I got like an accolade for it, but I remember it so clearly because the words were really chunky, you know, and then you could like draw, but it was like you're drawing with a mouse. It was just all kinds of crazy, but
yeah.
Yeah.
Well, you had, you know, when you think about that creative process though, it's the idea of that's where you start. And then technology started kind of speeding up and speeding up and speeding up. So as you're kind of building this career and, you know, to the point where computers are supposed to make things easier, did you start to see kind of your work, some of the creativity part of it, like that hands-on part, as you kind of elevated, that part kind of went away? It wasn't as, you know, it was more of your eye, what you could see, the mentoring part, but the actual making of things. Do you feel like technology helped that? Or do you think it kind of maybe brought in some things that you, what attracted you to it in the first place, maybe kind of wasn't there?
Well, I think it's like with any technology, like even like, you know, in the pandemic, all of a sudden now we're all on Zoom. And before that, we're like, who would even have like a video conference meeting like that, you know, like these.
Yeah.
It has its pros and cons, right? It opens up a whole new world of exploration and applications and ways to connect and do things. But it also then opens the door to all of these other things that move you away from the hand feeling or the connected feeling or whatever. So I think if you look at the technologies as just another tool in your toolkit, they become really powerful. Mm-hmm. If you go and say, I'm letting go of all these old things and I'm moving into these new things, I think you can fall into a space where you don't have as rich of a toolkit anymore. Mm-hmm. So for me, I'm always hitting up against this because I still really like tactile art making. And so for a long time, like, you know, when I was developing logos and identities, I did a lot of like hand cut linoleum or stamps. Like when I was doing events, so my career like trajectory is just sort of like wavy, but, after the creative direction in New York, I jumped out of that for a while and then organically started producing and designing events. And a lot of those were weddings all over the world. And I approached weddings as a branding project because they have all the same elements, right? You need a mission, you need a vision, you need your values, you need your color palette, you need a logo, a look and feel. What do you want your invitations to look like? What do you want your guests to feel like at the event? You know, is it a French farmhouse? Is it, you know, New England barn? Is it chandeliers? And, you know, what is it, a New York rooftop? Where, what does that look and feel, right? And I would do a lot of those as stamps. So I would design it and then I would go physically get a stamp made. And then we would stamp on stamp pads onto the bags, onto the napkins, on, because I really liked that humanity in it. Mm-hmm. That said, I've taken that a lot of the time. You scan it in, you add the pieces and parts. And so that sort of starts to speak to this like dichotomy, which is what I was saying before, like not getting pushed into a box.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I think you can use the tools multi-layered. And mm-hmm. when you can see that, then they become really powerful.
Well, we go back to talking about the idea of being put in a box. Mm-hmm. And, you know, for me, it's the idea of losing yourself. Because oftentimes when we say that word, or, you know, that phrase being put in a box, it's someone is putting you in the box or defining who you are. And I think many of us find ourselves working for someone else where we start off not in the box, but then we kind of learn the rules in, mm-hmm. in kind of quotes of the culture of the organization, of the expected behavior, of the look and feel of who you are, who they want you to be. And burnout is oftentimes a part of where you end up. You're in that box, you're doing everything that they like, you're producing like they like, but you don't recognize yourself.
Mm-hmm.
And I think sometimes that's when burnout, you hit the wall of those boxes that someone created around you. And oftentimes we do a little bit of an, you know, knocking down those walls as a reaction to the burnout. And we've talked a little bit about the idea of when you realize that you were kind of put into this box and you kind of kick and scream your way out of it to get back to who you know that you are and what you want to create in the world and who you want to help and work with, that then people say, well, you've changed so much. You're not who, why are you doing that? That's not what's, how's that related to your job or what you do? I want to speak a little bit to kind of that idea of when you're kind of making this change, or maybe it's not even a change, but an unraveling, return yeah. back to what you really wanted to do, how people around you start, the things they say, well-meaning as yeah. they want to be, but yeah, what kind of experience did you have kind of when you moved from the East Coast to the West Coast and kind of started to get, I would say, a little more back in touch with Christy, the creative?
Yeah, I think that, there's so many ways to go with this question, but I think that, like we said before, there's like the quintessential idea of what a creative is. And for me, that was dicey because the quintessential idea or the cliche of a creative is that you're floating in the clouds and you're flighty and you don't hit deadlines and you can't stay focused. And, but you're like a genius and you come up with this beauty that no one else could ever get to, you know? And it's kind of this like fantastical idea, that's not necessarily true. There's elements of that that's true. But I think that when somebody gets out flowing in their zone of genius and flow like that, it sometimes scares other people because they haven't found their flow triggers yet. And so then they look at it and go, oh, how could you even make a living like that? Look at that flighty person over there. And so in growing up, I made it really part of me to fight against that idea. So then I'm like, no, you don't understand. I'm not just making stuff to be making it. I've got strategy behind it. And this is about branding and we're telling a story and this has meaning. And there was a long time where I felt pretty elitist about that, where it was like, oh, this level of creating is higher than that level of creating. And thank God I fell into this world. But the fact of the matter is that that was just my own experience of a pushback to something that was threatening who I really was, right? So I felt like I had to walk into the room and not just be like the genius creative that somebody else would say, but I also had to have all these other chops, right? But then I would walk into another room where everybody was super buttoned up and I'd be like, let's get creative. Come on, you know, and I could let that go. And so I felt like it was like the box. When you define the box, when you start to push out of it, you're always the outsider. And then people's reaction to it is, whoa, this is different. Who are you? What happened? This is scary. So for me, the entire time that I was in New York doing creative direction, it was about me showing up as being able to lead, not just come up with creative ideas, but being able to lead. And then when we moved cross country, I had had two babies. I decided to leave being a creative director for a while because it was so intense. I was working 80-hour weeks. I was pulling all-nighters. I was not performing any kind of self-care. And to my naive brain, when I had my first child, I thought, oh, I'm going to take time off and find myself and move on to the next place. And then I realized that, like, I don't even know whether it's day or night because I have a newborn baby. And so that was a whole other exploration. But in that, I did sort of start to look at, oh, what lights me up? If I'm going to spend time on something, it needs to be something worth it to me, not just doing things for the accolades or the title or whatever. And in that, when I moved cross country, what I found when I took a job running all the fundraising events for an independent school, one where my children actually went. And what I found at that place was I really felt like I was in the box of the creative. Oh, we hired her and she is so creative. Mm-hmm. And it was frustrating. For the first time in my life, I felt like the word creative was a dig. Like it was like, oh, you know, it had all this baggage with it. And I was pushing up against that. And so I think what I needed to do in those instances, to your question, is get really clear about my why and get really honed in on what success means for me and not for someone else. And then those words are not quite as painful. I mean, they always cut, you know, you want to be liked. You want people to think you're doing a good job, but they're not quite as painful because you can stick to the plan of what you're looking for. And what it takes is courage to redefine what success means, because it's not really necessarily what you thought it was or what they told you it's supposed to be or what other people's expectations are. And that's kind of hard because you don't even know what the outcome's going to be. So for you to be able to dig your heels in and say, my definition of success is getting to paint once a week and see my kids for 2 hours when they get home from school and, you know, raise $50,000 for the school. Okay, that's good enough for this phase right now, mm-hmm. you know? And it's also about seasons of your life, I think. You have to get really okay that every season of your life can look differently, vastly differently. But, you know, I think what you're getting at with your question a little bit is like the reactions of other people. How do you mm-hmm. deal with those? And, you know, as I've been on the personal development journey for a while now, and it takes a lot of work and courage and practice and consistency to dig in and ask the questions of yourself. And when you're up leveling like that, you have to remember not everyone's on that same journey. And so a lot of how you end up presenting in a new way scares other people because they think you no longer need them. And then it triggers their fight or flight sort of reaction. And then, you know, they say things that are very hurtful or they don't understand. And so there's a lot of grace. There's a lot of just patience and understanding, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well, you talked a little bit about kind of the journey that you've been on of just going from being kind of this, a creative director and in a community of creatives and, you know, working really long hours, doing what needed to be done for the job, having, you know, like moving across country, having your babies, thinking like, I can have it all kind of mm-hmm. a thing, but then entering a new community where you're the only creative, or like you said, it sounded like a, you know, when they would say it, it was like a jab.
Yeah.
How are you moving forward to create and build that community where you can feel authentically, you know, like Christy? What are the kind of ways with building your business that you're kind of building that community at the same time?
Yeah. Well, you know, this has been a struggle because I was only in Northern California for six and a half years. And I felt like I just got my footing. I literally felt like, okay, I've got the kids on their trajectory. They're handled. We've got our systems in place. I've built community. I have a support network. I've got interest in what I'm doing and we're off and running. I can finally, like, I did my time. And now I can focus on what the next evolution is. And then we up and moved again. So this is a great question because I'm really in the thick of rebuilding our foundations while I'm also trying to launch new facets of my career. And it's challenging because everything's vying for the same time. But, you know, part of what is really important is not necessarily what you're making, but gaining awareness. And that's an important part of success, whether, you know, things are going to take off or just be living in a vacuum on your website somewhere, but nobody ever sees it. And so right now I'm really trying to root into authentic connection with people. And part of that is shining a light on these kinds of topics that no one talks about that much, but when you do bring it up, everyone's experiencing it, right? Everyone is experiencing some level of, disorientation, especially right now with the pandemic and all the different ways it plays out, and you think it's getting better and then it waves back in. And everyone needs to find space to connect to others. And through building community and creating space, we actually can delve into these things and let them go, not solve them, not heal them or any of those things necessarily, but let them go so that they don't stand in our way. So for me right now, I'm trying to put a lot of deposits out and let people decide whether they like what I'm saying or I'm not their cup of tea. And that's okay too. That's a hard pill to swallow. But once you actually get to a place where you know that people are already going to not like you. People already at this moment right here don't like you. That's not a reason to stop doing what you're doing, right? You have to keep going. And so once you, there's a sense of freedom once you kind of get okay with that and allows you to move forward. So I've been working on a few things. I'm launching a podcast. And the idea behind that is there's something, you've heard this before. We've talked about this so many times. You teach what you need to learn. And I launching a podcast that's really about love and freedom and what it takes to get to those places and what kind of life that means. And you get to be the person who defines that, right? You get to be the person who says, hell yes, this is it. This is what I wanted. And it's about, it's like about finding authenticity in that and not worrying what somebody else says. And that is, I think that's the key to freedom, but it's different for all of us, right? What your hell yes looks like is very different than what my hell yes looks like. And, but if I were to say, oh, does Heather think my hell yes is awesome? I might not go after my hell yes, right? And so, but this is something like I've spent my whole life looking for external validation. I worked up the, you know, I started in a school in Kansas, went to RISD, did branding, worked up to a creative director, all because, and spent crazy amounts of hours pulling off, you know, crazy projects because I wanted to be in the box that said, wow, look at her. She made it. I put myself in that box. But I think what's interesting about the box idea, just to go back to our a little bit earlier conversation here, is that, you know, we often say think outside the box. And that's true. But where I think creativity really dances is when you're inside the box and you have the limitations in front of you, and it's your job to figure out how to make it amazing anyway. And then those parameters actually give you a framework for which you can be super creative. And it sounds like the opposite, but sometimes having just a blank page where you can create anything is stifling. So sometimes the limitations actually give you the freedom. And when we think about a box, like you were talking about, we think about it as the four walls around you, but oftentimes the top of the box is open. We just don't look up. And then once we do look up, we think, how the hell am I going to climb the walls to get out of the box? But that's when you get creative and figure out how to do it, you know?
Well, and I think it's a difference between living in a box of someone else's creation versus you are in control of, yeah, of what that looks like. And really, you know, that idea, that's what you're helping your clients with, you know, is coaching them to kind of define their brand and define what those things are, is you are giving them some parameters in the range of questions to ask or really dig into what do you like, what do you not like, who are you as a not just person but a business. So you're helping them create that box so that it does make sense, right, for clients, yeah, to say, here's who I am, here's a gift, you know, for you, like you can tell who I am, instead of, you know, a lot of us, and you and I have both struggled with this, of just being like, I'm everything, mm-hmm, for every, like, how can I be everything for everyone? And that does come right back to that idea of like, I want to be successful. I want people to look at me and say, she's got it down. Christy can get that job done for me. I want to be that person, you know, but then when you're in it and you're pulling an all-nighter and you're like, why? Is this what I really want? Like, why, yeah, do I want this? And yeah, right, that validation thing just becomes so powerful for you, you know, as an incentive.
Well, yeah. And it's one thing to pull an all-nighter because you're in flow and it's like, you don't even know that time. You don't even know it's an all-nighter. Like, time ceases to exist. And pulling an all-nighter because you have a deadline and you've got to get something there for it, right? Those are two very different experiences. I want to be in the flow. That's it. Like, it's such a cool place to be in. And for me, creativity, like physically creating, And I think creativity isn't actually just physically creating, but the physical act of creating for me is a flow trigger. It's like way deeper and better meditation for me than actually trying to focus and do like a traditional meditation. Although those are really powerful pieces and I do them. If I want to really get into a place where I feel like I'm floating and life is amazing and, you know, all the good things, I just start some sort of art practice because that's how it triggers me. And from that place, you're expanded. And then more can come when you're expanded. When you're contracted, so like when you're under the deadline and you're trying to just pull it off, you're contracted. And it's hard to elevate the deliverable when you do that. You can deliver something. And a lot of times that like end procrastination, like, you know, deadline actually pushes you forward. So you do create some great things in those last moments because you don't have the time or energy or wherewithal to overthink it, to question it, to do all the things you would normally do. So there is some great part of that trigger, that procrastination, that deadline. But if you can get yourself into flow and also have the deadline, I think that's where the magic happens. And that has to do with like feminine and masculine energy. If you can get a balance of those two things, you know, the masculine holds the container and the feminine provides the value like that. And I don't mean this like male, female. I mean, just like from an energetic standpoint, like there's masculine energy and feminine energy. So what we're looking for is that balance. And I think like, just in terms of like pivot, like the idea of the pivot, we're all pivoting. We're all in a forced pivot currently, but we're all always pivoting, whether we acknowledge it or not, whether they're giant, you know, like 180 degree pivots or 90 degree pivots, or, you know, what about a 2 degree pivot? We often do a 2 degree pivot in our life. And, you know, what is it we've talked about before? It's like at 2 degrees, if you're in the middle of the ocean and you steer your boat just 2 degrees to the left, you're going to end up in a completely different continent. So I think when we think of pivot, we think of these big giant changes, because in our lives, we're all going to go through some big giant ones, but we shouldn't discount these tiny ones, the ones that seem tiny. Those are the ones that are actually guiding. And if we really look back at our trajectory, I bet the big pivot isn't that surprising. If you actually took stock of all the tiny 2 degree pivots you took along the way to get to the big pivot. But we don't pay attention to those because they're so minute most of the time. We don't even realize we're doing them. And then we get to the big thing and we go, hello world, look at me, I'm this different person. But like if you, and then that's what other people are saying, oh, you're different now. What happened to you? Where this came out of left field. And if you actually look back, it didn't. Like, for instance, like branding and brand strategy and doing like the creative director thing where there's so much pressure. I'm telling other people's stories. I'm trying to figure out how to like find the, like identify the essence, breathe life into it in a natural and organic way. And there was a lot of coaching of clients along that process because they also have to let go of a lot. They also have to trust. They also have to let go of control of their baby, their brand, their new product, whatever, and give this other person some control that says, oh no, if you make it blue, this is going to blow out of the water. And they're like, I don't like blue. And you're like, as a designer, like, no, this is the right way to go. Or, you know, that's a very rudimentary example. But there's a lot that a client has to let go of in branding and allow and trust a professional to pull out. And it's a relationship along the whole way. So there was a lot of mentoring that went along with that. Not to mention even like junior designers, senior designers, I cared about their development. I didn't run a team that was like, just do what I say. It was like, you know, we took a day a month to go to an art museum to fill our cups. We took an afternoon off and everyone got to go and do whatever they wanted during that. Like, there's development there to help people grow and expand. And so if you look at that whole way that that whole thing played out, this pivot into what I'm doing now is actually really natural. It's all of the skills. And it wasn't until I took my coaching certification that I realized that the process for coaching was almost identical to the creative process that we did for branding. Almost identical. So I've been doing that for 25 years. You know.
And that's your, you know, that's your secret sauce. I've told people before that there's all these things that you're good at. But even if you look back at the jobs that you had before, well, there's other people that are creative. There's other people that can use, you know, for me, like technology or project management or whatever. Your secret sauce was that kind of the mentoring and the connecting that you were able to do. And the thing that's why you were able to move up, and because you connected on a personal level to the outcome. It wasn't just for a client. It was a, you know, you were birthing it in many ways. And so there's a connection to it that you took responsibility for.
Yeah.
And those are all like great things. But as women, we kind of tend to, maybe not all of us, but many of us, we take on responsibility for so much more than what we mm-hmm. actually need to do, the things that weigh us down as much as the things that lift us up. And a creative pivot for me is just opening up your mind to creatively viewing your world and acknowledging I need to spend more time on the things that lift me up.
Yeah.
And for, you know, for you, because we've had conversations, but it is about the mentoring, the guiding, the creating the space for someone to figure out what is this essence of my business that I'm building. What does that really look like?
Yeah. And it's interesting because it's been easy for me to help other people identify for their brands what that secret sauce is. But when you turn the mirror on yourself, it's a much more difficult process.
Oh, it's so hard.
It's so hard. And, you know, I've been a person who always was the helper for other people, but never asked or accepted help for myself. And to come to the realization that, like, okay, oh my God, I can't do this for myself. I need support and help and, you know, all of the things. That was a big aha moment. And I think, you know, for a lot of women, that's a really difficult up level. It takes a lot to get there. But yeah. I also think that, you know, what you're saying is really interesting because it made me think of your word for the year, actually.
Mm-hmm.
Which, you know, I think is such a fun thing to do, is choose a word for the year. And I know it's like, you know, it's a big thing on Instagram and people, you know, mm-hmm. it's a trend that people are doing, but I mean, I think many of us have been doing it for many, many years. It's not a trend in our lives, but I love that you chose wonder as yours, because it's like, not only is it like encompassing the idea of being open and trying new things, but it's also turning this almost like childlike, whimsical sort of eye on the things that you already are a part of. What's a mm-hmm. new vantage point in which I can look at this? Why is this important? How did this come about? And then that leads us to expansion and exploration and really trying to cull down to the essence of like what it is that lights you up. Right. And, I just think that that's such a fun way to do it. And with creativity, I get really peeved when people say, oh, I'm not creative. Oh, you're so creative. I'm not creative.
I know.
It's too much for me to handle, because creativity is not like, can you draw? Can you paint? Can you sculpt? It's a way of being. How do you see the world? And inherently in that is wonder, mm-hmm. is open, is expansive, is like, it's a way of being. And I guess, you know, not to belabor the box idea, but like when I think the reason why I really took offense when someone would say, oh, you're an artist, and that means you're, mm-hmm. you know, I think they're trying to be nice and be like, oh, don't worry if she doesn't hit a deadline. She's a creative and will come in with it in the end. And I think they're trying to say something nice, but really it's a dig, because you're like, I don't need all that. Like, I actually have my shit together too. Like, you know, like I can handle all this whole thing. But with that, the reason why the creativity comment peeves me that someone says they're not creative is because every single action that we do every single day is a creative action. It's doing something that wasn't happening 2 seconds before you did it. So you've just created something new. Us living is art. The clothes you put on your body, that's art. The way you wear it, it's art. The way we have this conversation is art. It's art, it's creativity. It's a way of problem solving. And I feel like if you are a person who says, oh, I'm not creative, you have just said, I don't know how to solve problems. I just am going to stay in the box and do it the way I've always been told and not ask questions, not wonder. And I think like creativity always saves the day. It mm-hmm. always saves the day.
Well, what are your, so you have a couple words for the year. Mm-hmm. I'll wrap up our kind of interview by just talking about that a little bit, because I do feel that though, at least for me, and I talked about this on the last episode, that having a word of the year, and I had not done this until last year, never done it before, but having a word of the year allows me, almost like you were saying, a framework to hold on to something. And then I know if I ever feel stuck, we'll lead into that. If I ever feel stuck, I can at least go back to that word and say, how is this word playing in my life right now? How am I seeing things with possibility, with a sense of wonder? What has gone on today? What things were surprising to me?
Yep.
How can I move forward with that? So what about your word of the year, because you have a little bit longer relationship with this.
Okay, so let me just go back and tell you how it started. So we started doing a word of the year for our family. I have a family of four, my husband, two kids. Now we have a dog, but that's I'm family of four. When we moved from New York to the East Bay of San Francisco, we moved right before Thanksgiving. We left all of our stuff at our house in New York because it was staged to sell. And we moved into this house that had like a table and a piano. I think it was, none of us even play piano, but we moved in. We were all sleeping on air mattresses. We had no furniture. We had no friends. My husband's eardrum exploded because he got an ear infection. We had this sad Christmas tree up. And we are really social beings. Like I was saying before, we had built a community. We were the hosts of the New Year's Eve parties. Everyone came and potlucked at our house, right? With kids, we'd set up bedrooms. They'd all just sleep overnight. I mean, so we're sitting there on New Year's Eve and we've got no furniture. the TV, we had a TV on a like a box or like a table, and it was like playing the ball drop in NYC where we had just left, and we were kind of sad about leaving. And I watched my daughter was five, and she's sitting there as this little being, and she's looking up at this TV and watching it. And I was like, what have we done? This is awful. And so my husband and I were like, we got to do something. And of course, because we're creative, we had like tons of art supplies because we just take them with us. And we were like, okay, let's find a word and let's do a family art piece around that word. Let's choose a word that's going to light us up. And we're going to do a family art piece right here tonight. And then we're going to hang it on the wall where we can see it. And we're going to recite that word every single day. And it's going to pull us through. And we didn't pick one word. We picked a little phrase, and it was be courageous. Because we felt like that was really important to our family right then, because everybody was fearful. They weren't going to make new friends. We weren't going to have a life. We wanted to go back, blah, blah, blah. Transition is hard. We painted that. My husband took painter's tape and chunked out the letters because he's a really good typographer. Chunked out the letters. And then we just got paint and we all just like freeform painted it. And then we pulled the tape off. So then we used that for that year and it helped us. And then the next year we did it again. It was be thankful because now we had gotten to a better place. And then the next year we did it and it was be courageous, be thankful, connect. Because now it's time to really deepen our connections. And then it was make it fun and then create. Mm-hmm. And each year we've made a piece of art around it and we display it. And we literally breathe life into that word all throughout the year. And it's exactly what you're saying. What I believe happens, though, what most people think happens when you pick a word is that all of a sudden it's easy and beautiful and you flow into that word. You know what it does? I believe it calls into your life things that make you root down in and understand what that word means. So like for be courageous, many things came in that felt not great. And we had to go back to that word and say, how do we move through this space? Okay, we do it with courage, right? And so it's kind of like, you know, my husband and I joked a lot. We were like, maybe we should stop doing this because it's just bringing a lot of shitty stuff into our lives, you know? But what it does is I think it brings in what you need to experience to really understand why that word showed up for you in the first place. And then when you're done with it, it goes, right? So last year was believe. And this was our next big transition. And for me, believe was our family word. And then I was like, well, I need something a little more for myself. And trust was mine. And then it was believe, trust, receive was mine last year. This year, my family chose the word open for us because we're again almost identical to the last move. We moved to a place where we don't really know anybody. We're rebuilding community. Things have been really sticky. We're trying to go with our, you know, minds open. And so open is not just about like open to new experiences, but also like, what are you willing to receive? What are you bringing in? Like I said before, we got a new dog and he devoured a giant rock and we had to have emergency surgery to remove the rock. And all that came up for me was stuck. The rock is stuck. And the lesson in that, you know, my kids were like, why is this happening? The dog. And all I kept saying was like, we have the ability to get unstuck. Yes, this was a surgery that actually had to get something dislodged and unstuck, but there are ways to get unstuck. And it doesn't necessarily mean that it's easy, but it's worth it. And so for me, that spoke so deeply in such a like smack me in the face kind of visceral way that my year is about getting unstuck. And I think that played really well with the family mantra of open. And then ultimately what those two meant to me is free. So my three word phrase is open, unstuck, and free. Mm-hmm. So that goes back to what we were talking about with this transition, how I felt like I had everything lined up and now I'm starting over from scratch again. And it felt like, oh, I'm stuck, but I'm not stuck. And so it's already been guiding me and helping me. And, you know, maybe he's put the fire under my bootay to get the, get this podcast launched in the next month. So, yeah, long-winded. Well,
yeah. We'll have information in the show notes so that people can contact you, but where do they follow you on Instagram and your website if they want to go check out your info?
Yeah. On Instagram, I'm just the first letter of my name, K_ and then Neller, that's an N, not an M. And on Facebook, I'm Christy Neller. And then my website is christyneller.com. And yeah, you can find all that information out, things I'm working on and stuff there. And then, yeah, I'm launching this podcast. So I'm keeping the name of it a little secret at the moment, but, in the next, I'm doing a little love bomb challenge the month of February, where I'm putting a piece of art and a call to action with regard to like self-development up every day. And through that time, some point in there, I will talk about the podcast name and get that all out. So yeah.
Well, it sounds great. And I know we already have plans for a few more conversations this year. Mm-hmm. And so I'm glad we finally got you on the podcast, because we've been talking about it for a while. Chris, you know, I'll just say to the listeners, so Christy and I think we like to remind ourselves if one of us is feeling a little stuck or one of us has to make a decision, that we like to remind ourselves if it's, you know, if it's not a hell yes, it's a hell no, to just kind of, because both of us get bogged down and they're like, well, but this is good, but this part's not great, but this part's good. And the, you know, it's just the, is it a hell yes, or it is a hell no, and you need to move on. And I think that also, outside of the word of the year, helped me so much last year to get through some things when I was feeling stuck to do that. So that's why you're my hell yes sister, I think.
I know.
And things of just like, we bonded a little bit over that particular phrase.
That's right. And also just to know that you have someone to kind of go back to when you're having those issues, I think that is a game changer, right?
Oh, yeah.
Because, you know, to bounce an idea off someone and just have them be like, well, is it a hell yes? And you're like, well, I don't know. And you're like, well, if it's not a hell yes, then that's, you know, let's talk about this. Let's figure it out. You know, I think, like I said before, reaching out and getting support in that way, it's the game changer.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, that's, you and I are like bouncing those off of each other all the time. So.
Well, and that's also that idea of when I, you know, when I said it is really hard to do your own thing, it's hard because you're not necessarily willing to be honest with yourself of what your thing is or who you are or what, because you lead in fear, you know, you have this fear of outside perception. But that's also why it's great to work with kind of a coach like you, who brings coaching to the branding conversation, because you're able to ask the questions that need to be asked to get to that point. And when you're by yourself, you sometimes know those questions, you're just not wanting to really answer them. So
right.
Yeah,
there's no accountability.
Having a guide that just creates silence and like, you get to fill it in. I'm asking the questions. This is a good, you know, a love bubble of a, you know, spot to just to do that. So yeah.
Yeah. Well, thanks.
Well, thanks for being my guest today. And I look forward to our future conversations and your podcast coming out in the not so distant future.
Yeah. And I hope you'll come join me for more conversations over there too. And I am so thrilled to be here. Thank you for inviting me. And conversations with you are always amazing.